2098, Karen Shipman against Eric Hamilton. Mr. Paulson.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Patchett. This case basically comes down to whether or not there's qualified immunity based upon the obstructing service of process in the state of Illinois, 720 Illinois Compiled Stats 5/31-3. Whoever knowingly resists or obstructs the authorized service or execution of any civil or criminal process or order of any court commits a Class B misdemeanor. In this case, my client, the appellant defendant, Eric Hamilton, as a sheriff's deputy, was delivering and serving upon Mr. Hansberry, a patient at the Sparta Community Hospital, an emergency order of protection.
Now, suppose Mr. Hansberry had been in the middle of open-heart surgery and Deputy Hamilton had come in and had barged into the operating room and announced to the surgeons, "I'm sorry, I have to serve process here." Do you think that the surgeons would have been obstructing service of process if they had said, "Please wait until the operation's over"?
No, I do not. And the reason I don't, I think those circumstances would be an extreme circumstance. No less likely than someone perhaps barging in here and saying, "I've got an emergency order of protection to serve on Mr. Paulson." Would they be allowed to do that, or would they have to wait till I was done with my argument?
Well, the reason I'm asking, of course, is because hospitals are places where people are charged with preserving the health of people, and the nurse here went up through her chain of command, didn't ever obstruct the door or anything, but put Deputy Hamilton on the phone, and they were told that the medical judgment was he should wait until the morning. Could have sat down there and waited.
But Deputy Hamilton wasn't asking for a medical opinion. It was apparent.
But you've conceded that a medical opinion will be necessary sometimes.
What if
he was very, subject to immunological compromise and having somebody come in without giving him an injection of some kind would have compromised him, or he needed a mask? I mean, there are all kinds of medical. He was in an ICU-like environment, right?
Well, that's the facts as...
Well, as we must take them, right?
That what an ICU-like environment is, I have no idea. But the fact is that people are served with process in the hospital all the time. There are criminals that are in the hospital guarded by deputies and law enforcement officers all the time. There should be some sort of balancing test.
That officers can just walk into any hospital room, anywhere, anytime, without the permission of the doctors?
No, it isn't. That is not my position. My position is this nurse, even in the light most favorable to the plaintiff in this case, refused to give her name. She walked away. He never got...
He was on the phone with her supervisor. She's going to prepare an IV.
I understand. She still walked away.
Why did she have any reason to think that she needed to be there? He's on the phone talking to the people with authority.
And he was refused access.
She says she never blocked access to the door. There's no evidence in this record that the door was locked. There's no evidence that she was putting her body in front of it.
But
he wanted her to say, "Fine, go ahead and serve the man," and she didn't say that. She said, "I need to go up my chain of command," and she was instructed not to say that.
He was never given
authority. He hauls her off to jail.
He was never given authority to go into that hospital room. And again, that's not even clearly established. I think we showed in our reply brief that there's not even law on whether or not, under what circumstances, a police officer is entitled to or is there a privacy right in a nursing home versus a hospital or the emergency room versus a private room in a hospital.
So he couldn't go in without authority then, right?
Pardon me?
Apparently he wouldn't go in without authority.
He would not go in without the blessing of the
And she didn't give
hospital.
So anytime somebody doesn't do what he wants in a hospital, if he's in the ICU or whatever, then that's obstruction?
Well, it depends. It certainly could be obstruction if,
well, you,
in my opinion...
He thought it was, and he hauled her off. The other thing that concerns me, I didn't see anybody really mention this, but if this really is her patient, and he is in intensive care, you may dispute that, away she goes. Now who's taking care of her?
I would agree that that would be an issue.
Well, it is an issue on these facts, as Judge Mannion points out.
But I don't know that that was... That issue is really, I mean, if this nurse had committed murder and she was coming, they were coming to get her, would they take her away anyway, despite the fact that she might have been?
That's a completely different situation. She puts him on the phone with the nursing supervisor. The nursing supervisor conveys the CEO of the hospital's opinion about what to do. She thinks it's being handled. Again, these are the facts in the light most favorable to her. I'm not saying that somebody couldn't contest this later on. But she doesn't have any reason to think. And then suddenly she's the nurse in charge and she's whisked away to jail by this guy. And so nobody's taking care, I guess, of Mr. Hansberry or anyone else on the floor.
My concern is that this police officer who's this is emergency order protection. Obviously there's domestic violence.
What's he going to do when he's in the, I mean, that's why I'm saying there was a much more reasonable option, which is maybe to tell Deputy Queen to just sit there until 8 o'clock in the morning to make sure that Mr. Hansberry didn't suddenly get better and leave. He could have served the order quite easily within 6 hours.
But Mr. Hansberry could also have checked himself out of the hospital.
Not
the next
Deputy Queen was sitting there watching him. He could have,
I understand.
The minute he walked out of the door, he could have served the order on him.
But there's also two deputies on duty in Randolph County at any given time during that. I'm just saying it's not like there's a 50 personnel police department here.
What was the purpose? What was he was going to serve what?
An emergency order of protection.
Okay.
That the court gave this order to serve him.
Of whom? Protection from whom or of whom? What?
It was to protect, to demand that he not go near nor come into so many feet of another person.
Well,
and who that person is.
Who's supposed to monitor that? You know, when you hand it to him, say, don't go near anybody and leave?
Well, that's the court. I might as well just finish up here anyway. I think the whole purpose behind the emergency order of protection is to right. Do I believe it works? No, but it's a court order that supposedly protects someone from domestic violence in most instances. I still think, though, that the issue here is that there's the Northern District and the Southern District. One has put a physical restraint type requirement on this obstructing service of process, and one hasn't. So it can't be clearly established. Whether you like the fact or not, under these facts, I still believe that a reasonable police officer does not know. It's not clearly established whether or not whether any delay or hindrance in service of process violates the statute. The Northern District says you don't need physical restraint. The Southern District says you do need some sort of physical restraint. Words or misinformation is not enough. And I think based on that, a reasonable police officer certainly doesn't know whether he has the authority to arrest somebody who hinders, without physical restraint, his ability to serve process. Thank you.
Mr. Paulson, my card here shows that Mr. Chrysler from your firm was also going to address this.
Sorry, he ended up having other matters and actually had a jury trial. And
so you're representing the client by yourself. Thank you.
Thank you.
In that case, we'll hear from Mr. Patchett.
May it please the court, counsel. This case represents a very serious infraction, and we have to take the case based on the facts most favorable to the plaintiff. And if those show up any possibility of a cause of action, then the summary judgment should have been denied. And obviously that's the case in this situation.
You mean qualified immunity, right?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes. On the issue of qualified immunity. The interesting fact, and we have to take those facts as the district court found them, the purpose of this argument is that the plaintiff, Nurse Shipman, pointed out the location of the subject matter of the order of protection. There was a window there, and both she and the other deputy pointed out that the subject of the order of protection was behind the window watching the whole event as it took place. And although there's some dispute between the named defendant and his co-officer about whether or not she told him, the facts as the district court found them is that he was laying right there looking at them, that she never did anything physically or any other way to hinder them from going in and serving the order of protection. The initial reactions, I think, of the officers were quite correct, that we're in a hospital and we probably shouldn't be barging around without some sort of authority. But what authority would Nurse Shipman have had? She was not the security director of this hospital. She was a registered nurse. As it turned out, the only registered nurse on duty in the entire hospital. She did not refuse to tell them where he was. She simply entered into a dialogue with the officer, a quite proper dialogue. She has a duty as a registered nurse, a duty of care to her patients, and she entered into a dialogue with him. He did not object to that dialogue. He did not say, I want to serve it immediately. He voluntarily entered into that dialogue and let her talk to the doctor on call. And based on that doctor's suggestions, her supervisor, who ultimately called the CEO of the hospital, and all of their suggestions, the deputy stood there the entire time while these phone calls were going on. He didn't insist on immediate service. And in fact, he admitted in his deposition, he could have walked in that room right where that gentleman was at any time and served it.
During these calls, Ms. Shipman went about her business, is that right? She did not stay there monitoring the calls, I presume. He was on the phone and then with her supervisor, and she apparently called her supervisor and went on up the line. It seems that somebody, everything that seems to be standing in the way of this is, don't go in there without the doctor.
I believe the facts, as the court found them, Your Honor, were that she initially talked to the doctor in the presence of the deputy. She then, at his...
On the phone?
Yes, on the phone. There was no doctor in the hospital. There was no other RN in the hospital, but she was it. But she calls the doctor on call, and as the facts state, in the presence of the deputy. And then, based on the conversation she had with the deputy, he suggested to her, the deputy, to call her supervisor, which she did.
Was it the deputy or the doctor who suggested that she call the nursing supervisor?
It was the defendant. I believe the doctor and the defendant suggested that.
I thought the doctor said she should make that call.
Yes.
Okay, so that's agreed. The deputy did say call the supervisor.
Yes, I believe that's true, Your Honor. And in any event, she was in the immediate area, not physically restricting the officers, but when the deputy finally got on the phone with the supervisor, she walked away. Now, she wasn't retreating. A lot of it's made of the Silverman case. There's no indication she's retreating. And, in fact, she had to be in his immediate presence because he went right over at the end of that phone call and said, I'm going to arrest you. Now, much has been made in the brief of the appellant that she refused to give her name. I think had she refused to give her name when he walked into the hospital and said, I have an emergency order of protection, they might have had some argument. She refused to give her name after he walks over to her and says, I'm going to arrest you, at which point I think she has no duty, no requirement to give him any further assistance once she's been told she's under arrest or about to be placed under arrest. Where could she have...
She's the only registered nurse in the hospital?
The only one in the entire hospital. It's a very small rural hospital. It's a small rural county. There aren't many deputies, and there aren't many nurses on any given evening in Randolph County. There are no physical acts of resistance present in the facts before the court. The defendants or the appellants would have you believe that inaction, which might or may hinder or delay the service of process, could be probable cause for arrest. There may be some situations where that inaction could be. But if we were to take it in this situation or in a lot of situations, we would it would be nonsensical and maybe be constitutionally infirm to say that a police officer would reasonably have a probable cause for an arrest simply because inaction may delay him by a matter of seconds from serving process. But in any event, under the facts present here, that's not true, because the facts present here say that as soon as the officers got to the nursing station, they were told of the subject's whereabouts. They knew where he was the entire time. They could have walked in there and served it the entire time. They were arresting her because she did not give them authority, authority I submit, which she may not legally have had to give them, and which would have conflicted with her other duties, both as a professional and perhaps as mandated by the federal government through the HIPAA Act. She is required not to give certain information, and they have not established to the district court that that was not a requirement that she had on that day, that duty on that day, not to give them that information. But in fact, she told them where he was located. How did the call to the doctor ever block service? It may have delayed it somewhat if he had actually served the subject. He never did serve him. He arrested her instead of serving the matter. He didn't leave Mr. Queen there to serve the emergency order protection. What he did was make a completely separate arrest and remove the registered nurse from the hospital. But how could the call to the doctor on call have blocked service of process if the officer acquiesced in that call, waited while the call was made, entered into a dialogue with the plaintiff about the call, and then later involved himself in a call with a supervisor of nurses?
The supervisor said, wait for the doctor in the morning or something?
That's exactly what the supervisor said. And when the supervisor and the officer hung up, he waited. Instead, he went and arrested the nurse. He did not argue with the supervisor. He did not tell the supervisor, you don't have the authority to tell me to wait. He simply got off the phone with her and went and arrested the nurse. That can't be a reasonable action by a police officer based on a purported probable cause for obstruction of service of process. Again, Your Honors, briefly talk about the Silverman case, the Northern District case. In that case, the court found that an individual who owned some property that was about to be replevined met the officers at the door, told them up front they weren't going to get it, and then retreated. That's simply not the fact here. First of all, the plaintiff in this case did not have overwhelming authority to grant or deny access. She's a nurse. She pointed out the location of the subject of the emergency order protection, and she didn't retreat. She stayed right with the officers through two or three phone calls, until he was on the phone, the officer was, with her supervisor, whereupon she went to prepare a medical procedure, an IV, I believe. What was she supposed to do? Other patients needed treatment. She conformed with all her requirements, all her duties, and they arrested her basically for not giving authority, which I submit she probably didn't have in the first place to grant. It was a night shift at a rural hospital. If you don't have any other questions, I will yield back the balance of my time and thank the court very much.
Thank you, Mr. Patchett. How much time does Mr. Paulson have? So you have a minute.
I suggest maybe I should sit back down. I just think that there is a difference of Southern District, Northern District on. They disagree on whether or not you need this physical component to the obstructing of service of process. And I think based on that, it can't be clearly established. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Our thanks to both Mr. Paulson and to Mr. Patchett, and the case will be taken under advisement.